Rabbi Ashkel.
Oh, yeah. All right, so by Ben Nachman, question is, so what is this process that literally means drying, but it's not drying, it's really scouring. So Rav Amar Bimayim. Rav says, you pour water on it. Okay. Rav Amar Achoda Omar Be'efer. He says, no, what you have to do is to use ashes. Ashes will be like a scouring powder. Okay? Rav Amar Bimayim Bimayim. Rav said, you have water, and again water. V'lo Be'efer. Well, actually what he's saying is Bimayim. If it's water, then in that case, Bimayim V'lo Be'efer means water and not with ashes. Rav Amar Achod Omar, he says, Be'efer, Be'efer V'lo Bimayim. Now, you have to use the scouring powder, right, the ashes, and not water. Hello, and now we go on to the next page. Pardon me? About the jars? Yeah, what he said is, the point that he's trying to make is that they have to be tightly sealed to make sure that the guy is never going to open it up and use it, because even... What? Yeah. The mouth of the jugs that should be facing down. Right. Okay.
It has two pages.
Right. We should be iron hay right now.
Iron hay, right.
Iron hay. Oh, it's not in dollars. I have iron hay. Sure. What happened to iron hay?
No, it has two pages.
Iron hay, I have it right here.
Oh, you have it. Okay, good.
Iron hay.
Yeah.
Top of the page.
Correctly, right.
Bob,
alright, so we see over here, right, that we are now,
huh? It has two pages that are the same.
No, the dots are different. One dot, two dots.
I know.
No, the Hebrew text in art school, it's very confusing until you get one. Because they simply, they make the picture of the same page over and over again from the top until you finally get down to the bottom. The English is different.
Iron hay?
It's different.
Yeah, right. But we're on iron hay, Amin Aleph right now. But it continues what we did at the bottom of the previous page. There's an argument between Rav, between Rav and Bar Chana. One says water, and the other one says ashes. Okay? So they're trying to straighten out this one. This is the conclusion that I've come to. They're making like a pshara, okay? A compromise. Rav Omar Bimayim, he says, yeah, you have to use water. And likewise, you have to use ashes. Rav Bachona Omar, he says, Le'efer, you have to use ashes. Right? And then you have to use water.
If I care.
Right. The low pligain, they're not really an argument. Because, so if it's already wet, then in that case, use ashes. If it's dry, then in that case, you have to wet it first. Okay? Okay. So I think I'm going to stop at this particular point. But obviously, tonight, we continue, and it is the 6th of February, the year 2008, and we continue now at the top of Avodah Zarah, Ayin Hey, Amud Aleph. Okay, so the problem that they faced was, remember, they were talking about jars that had been used, or items that had been used for, by a goy, which presumably had Yad Nesach at one time in it. So, when he says, if it's wet, so presumably it's because maybe some drops of Yayin Nesach had been absorbed over there. And so therefore he says the only way, that you can get rid of it is to scour it first, okay? And then you rinse it in water, okay? On the other hand, if it's dry, then presumably it's not going to be, it will not have any effect anymore, And so in that particular case, first you use water in order to cleanse it, and then you use the scouring method in order to do it. But as we'll see, we're not finished with it yet. Okay. Okay, so now we continue. Why? Because it says right now, all right, Itmar, we learned, it says that Be'rav, in the school of Rav, Mishpeda Rav, in the name of Rav, Amrei, they say, Tarte Tlas, meaning 2, 3. Ushmuel Omar, Shmuel, who is in Pompadiso, he said, Tlas Dalit, 3, 4. So the question is, what is 2, 3 and 3, 4? Okay. So
secret code.
Okay. So if it is wet, as Rashi explains, Bitivuso, right, then Tati, then only two types. Namely, first ashes and then water, right? So that's two. Biabeshto, says Rashi, if it's dry, then it's tlas, right? It's three times, because first water, then ashes, and then you wash it off with water again. Okay, okay. So far, so good. Okay. The surah, of course, yeah, in surah, Masdu Hochek. Bepumpadiso, Masdu Be'rav, well, let's say, all right, first of all, Basura Masdu Hochek. This is the reading, this is the way they learnt it. Where? In Yeshiva in Surah, which was where, of course, that's where Rav was. Rav was in the Surah, okay?
Surah and Pumpadiso.
Right, Surah and Pumpadiso, the Nahardo, these were the big yeshivas over there in Babylonia, but particularly Surah and Pumpadiso were the two most prominent ones, okay? So, in Surah, this is the way they had learned this particular problem. But in Pumpadiso, Masnu, they learned as far as that. Be'rav Amre, that the students of Rav say, Mishmeda Rav, in his name, Tlos, 3, Dalit, 4, right? Shmuel Omar, Dalit, Hey, and Shmuel says, 4, 5, Velo Plige, and yet they are not in disagreement with one another. Because Mar, Kochoshev, Maya Basrai, one of the authorities, mentions water as the final rinsing agent, right? And the other one didn't even mention it at all, even though it was assumed, this is what you have to add, it was assumed that they would use water as the final one. When you kasha something, I have to tell you right now, let's say that you have a spoon that, you know, you mixed it up, you made a treif, let's say it was a milk spoon, you put it into fleshek pots or something like that. All right. So, how do you make it kosher? Well, of course, what is the process? Number one, for 24 hours, you're not supposed to do anything. Okay, that's number one. Second, you should clean it, first of all, but then put it aside for 24 hours. After that, what do? You put it into a pot of boiling water, okay? And what do you do when you take it out of the pot of boiling water? The answer is you put it underneath the sink and pour cold water on it. So that this is really what they're talking about over here. This is the final, right, so this is the final thing that you wash it off with cold water. Okay. So that's, so it depends how you count the steps, that's all. As for example, Tlos Medalad, you know, 3 and 4, so it says Tlos Biritivusa. If it's wet, right, then in that particular case, first Afer, right, ashes, Umayim, then comes what I'm quoting Rashi right now, okay? The Afer, and again, ashes. The Afer Pesha Chosev, but I said Mayim, Lahavir Afer, and even though he again then takes water in order to remove the ashes, right, obviously, you're not going to leave them on them, right? Han Humayim Lekachoshev, he didn't mention that, you know, this water. Only he took it for granted. that this is what you're going to do, and so that's why he didn't put in the count. The lav lishem and negiva, because this vessel, final water, is not really in connection with this process of using, you know, the ashes for scouring, but it's only l'nakosim in ho'efer. It's only in order to clean us from the ashes. That's all. That's what was there. The dalad, the dalad biabeshto, mayim, and four if it's dry, right? Because first they have to wet with water, then comes ashes, afer, then comes mayim again, then comes afer again, or mayim basroi, and then comes the final rinsing with water. And he says, Lo chashiva rav, Rav didn't count it, lo boy afer, right? He did not require ashes ex ela chadazib, only once. Ushmuel boy efer trezib, but Shmuel says they have to use ashes twice. That's the reason why one counted four and the other one counted five. Dalad hay. Okay. Rav says only, right, Mishmeh Rav, plus 3, 4, right, the 3, 4. But Shmuel says it's 4, 5, and that's how he gets them, okay? But in any case, what does it always end up with?
Water.
The water, okay. Boim minahim and Rabbi Abo. So they ask the following question from Rabbi Abo. He says, Hani gurge darbay mai. Well, the question is, what is this word gurge? So the explanation, you know, that is given by Rashi says a kolim. So the question is, so what's a kolim? So he gives a French word, rivorsi, which I frankly don't recognize either. The korchin, oh, son, sivus apapur, shalois pazu hanovim. What he's saying, however, is what happens is they take the bunches of grapes, okay, and they tie it around with some kind of a netting. This is what it is. It's a kind of a netting to tie it around. The object being that when they smash it, you know, with the pound it, that the grapes shouldn't scatter all over, so that this holds the grapes in place so that they can press down upon it and, you know, begin to squeeze out the juice that way. All right, so what if it is something that has been used by a goy, right? So, and that the question is, you know, so how do you make it kosher for use for a Jew, right? So he says, by the way, the Aramean, but in reality we understand that he doesn't really mean an Aramean. Means, you know, an idolater, okay? An idolater. How do you make it fit, you know, for use? Why did you? So, Omalei Rabbi Abohu, so Rabbi Abohu said to him, Tinik Tuho, we have learned already in another connection. And this is in connection with Tuma and Tara, where it says, Hare Shehoyu Gito Vavis Badov Tebeim. Vikesh La Sesimatara. Alright, here's the situation. Gitov, remember, that's pressing the wine, right? The wine press. Beis Badov, the Beis Habad is what is used for olives, to press olives. Okay? So, if his wine press or his olive press, right? became tummy, okay? And he wants to prepare the wine or the olives in a state of Tara, then in that particular case, you have to do something with the implements that you're using, right? So Hadapim, these would be boards, the Hadashim, those apparently are also, again, like the netting, okay? And the other thing, the Lord love him, it doesn't mean that the lulus, but what it means is that it, let's say palm branches or something that they use in order to clean the premises or something like that, okay? So Madichon, he has to soak them in water, washes them, right? V'akalin shel netzaren v'shel botzbutz benagvan. And if it is netting which is made out of rushes or best, whatever the heck that is, I don't know. It's some kind, you know, these are plants, the fibers of which they use for various purposes. Some say hemp or something like that, okay? But at any rate, this is what they are, right? So in any case, these, he says, menagvan, he has to scour them first. V'shel shipa v'shel gami miyashton yud beis chodesh. But if they're made out of shipa, whatever the heck that is, many of these words, I don't know if I know them what they are, and I don't know whether our scroll knows what they are either. But let's see, how does he explain shipa over here? Shipa. Again, I don't know what this word is. He only gives a French equivalent, but I don't recognize it over here. I have to explain. Unfortunately, I don't have a dictionary of Rashi. Okay. Michel Gummy. Gummy says that Jonc, that I recognize, because that's a bulrush in French. You know, they grow by the water's edge, the bulrushes. Mm-hmm. Jonc, that's what they are.
Yeah.
Right. Well, if you remember, there was a question, number one, first of all, about the olives of Goyim. They finally decided that olive oil would be permitted, but at one time they had put an issur on it.
Was it because they used
we had that God rules. How many, maybe a half year ago or more, I mean, that we had that, that we learned. Yeah.
Is it because the trees were objects of the idolaters, but they didn't trust the
Well,
that came from it?
I don't know whether that was really the motivation. There was a motivation that they wanted, you know, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they felt that they had to encourage Jewish economy. And one of the steps in encouraging Jewish economy was to put a ban on certain non-Jewish items, so that people would buy specifically from Jews. Yes.
Yeah. Now the olives were used for in Jewish purposes.
Yes, of course.
To make the pure oil.
Yes, of course. Right. The Beis HaMikdash was used not only oil for the lighting, but oil was an essential ingredient in the mincha.
Right.
You know, the meal offering.
They would have had to be very careful about
right.
Who own the olives?
Yeah,
right.
You can't tread on olives if they're full of pits.
No, not for treading. It's a question of who owned them.
No, that's this separate question.
Oh. Yeah. No, even though there are pits, they could be strained, removed, I mean, from the mash. You see, that they could do. Right.
And they had an old olive press. It was made out of stone.
Well, that's correct. That's right. It's going to be mentioned in the Gemara text too. Right.
So
right.
They would have to remove the pits first.
Yeah. Well,
someone would have
when you crush, you're going to get oil.
Right.
You're going to get pieces of olive, and you're also going to have the stone. So they can be removed. They can be strained, and then you could repress if you want, you know, the whatever was left over, the meat and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah. Because if the pits are there, you can't really crush it all the way. You can't get
all
the
So that's why they had more than one pressing. Now for the menorah.
Dave, this neocotomy, just like the botanical garden, we actually have, like, an ancient God Shem, show us after how they did it. And it is, if they do it right, it's really, the crystals are really forceful. They do it, do a number of presses, and then the show where the oil would, like, drain out. The other thing is, look, it's a great comment. What is the Christian Gethsemane? That's God Shem.
Yes.
Right.
Correct. It's correct. Just as Bethlehem, I mean, was named after, you know, the fact that it was a place where bread was plentiful and so on, right? Or Bethesda. What's that? Bethesda, right. Chesed.
Bethesda, right.
I mean, you don't recognize it, because you know they did it. The Goyim get it, you know, from the Greek translation. So naturally, in order to fit Greek translation, you don't have an exact reproduction of what the Hebrew sounds were. It's only an approximation. Certain sounds in Hebrew that didn't exist in Greek. So it was necessary to do that. Then when the Latin version was published, you know, they based it primarily upon the Greek. They didn't base it upon the Hebrew. So that's how you have...
Like the telephone game, with each translation, something was lost from the original.
Correct.
Translation.
Yeah. Okay, was that in the middle? Yeah. Okay. So, the latter case, all of this made out of, you know, rushes and something like that. So he says, it's miyashdan yud beis chodesh. You have to let them dry up for 12 months. That's what the Gemara says over there. Okay. You know, some of them could have been made kosher before, you know, by scouring it, right? But this, the latter cases that they mention, they say that they have to keep them for 12 months, and only then can you do what? Make them kosher. Now, you've heard also, you know, that sometimes with... something hasn't been used for 12 months, we assume that, you know, whatever was trafe inside over there is no longer there or something like that, you know, that's gone or something like that.
Evaporated.
Right.
Does that go for dishes?
Well, there's a question, right. It's not as simple as it sounds. But sometimes we do employ the 12-month rule.
How about dishes that haven't been used for 30 years?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a good question.
Still a question?
It's a question, but many people feel that in that case it can already be makel. Yes? Yeah. Right, of course. Well, up in the attic we have dishes that we used to make Pesach.
Yeah.
And, you know, we haven't made Pesach in many years, though. Ever since physically it was too difficult for us to do it. Right, yeah. So some of them we've converted into chametz. And our children, God bless them, they all have enough.
That's what happens. The kids don't want it.
Right. Right. Okay.
So where are we?
Yeah, we're just about the middle of it. All right. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Omer, he's of the somewhat different opinion. He says, "Manicha negas negas mibad levat." Instead of waiting 12 months, he says, it's enough if you use them. You know, if you use the wine press once, and then you let it stay until the next time you're going to use it. or the olive press until the next time you're going to use the olive press. But what they say is, Ein Tanakame. Isn't that what the other one is saying when he says 12 months? In other words, because the pressing only takes place how often?
Once a year.
Once a year. So the question is, so is there a difference of opinion with them? So Iker ben Ayhu says, yes, there is a difference in the case of chorpe ve'afle. Chorpe means that either it's earlier, or afle means it's later. For example, this year, today is Rosh Chodesh Adar, right? All right. Now, normally we would expect that in 2 weeks we would be celebrating Purim on this day, right? But we're not going to celebrate Purim on this day. We're only going to call it Purim Cotton, because when do we celebrate it? We celebrate it on other days. Why do we have to have a leap year?
And of course, the way the calendar went.
Yeah, it's not just because of the calendar, right? But also, how does it affect the natural order? What's going on in the world of nature? Exactly, exactly. So
if it gets too far forward, they have to
adjust it. Right. So this is one of the reasons why we have to do it, because if we see that the plants are not yet ready as they should be according to the ordinary schedule, so then you have to add an additional month. That's one of the reasons why we have an Ibrior, as we call it in Yiddish, you know. In other words, a leap year that we have. Right, yeah. So, likewise, with the grapes and with the olives, some may ripen earlier and some later. And so, therefore, you can't say that, you know, if you're going to do it from one pressing to another, that necessarily it's going to be exactly 12 months. It may not be exactly 12 months. That's the reason why he says there is a disagreement, although in general they're talking about a somewhat similar period of time. Pardon me?
That's
a Ibrior. An Ibrior.
Shnat
Ibor, right. Or Shadabu Beret, we say in Hebrew.
Iber.
Right.
And
No. That's nothing to do with it. It's a Hebrew word. Ibor. Ibor is.
Yeah. Ibor is the Hebrew word?
Yeah.
But it's also
the intercalation of the. It's called Ibor Hashanah. Right.
The German word, über.
Yeah, that means over or something. Yeah. Okay, right. Correct. I mean, you mentioned Deutschland über alles.
Yeah.
And Pesach has to come out in the
Aviv. Pesach must be. That's the whole point, exactly.
Yeah.
Right. It has to be Chodesh Aviv. Right. Yeah. Okay, we'll do a couple of more lines. We'll call it a night. Okay. Okay, right. Rabbi Yossi Yomer, right, Rabbi Yossi says, Haroitza L'Taron, Miyad, if you want to make them, you know, Tahor, immediately, then in that case, Magilon, then you have to use Hagola, Beroschid. In other words, that's, you know, using the hot boiling water that you dip it in, right? Or choltam memezesim, or else you scald them in olive juice. Now, what does it mean, olive juice? Not really olive juice. What it means is to scald them in the water that had been used in order to clean the olives or something like that. Okay. Yes. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Mishum Rabbi Yossi, Omer Rabbi Shimon says in the name of Rabbi Yossi, he says, Manichon Tachas Tzinor Shemema Mekalchin, says you put them underneath a pipe where the water keeps on gushing, right? Or B'mayon, or in a fountain, Shemema Rotfin, where the water is always running, okay, literally
like
pursuing, okay.
Yeah, like
you translate exactly, sometimes doesn't make sense in English.
Does that mean something like the living waters? The
yes,
like
right.
It's got to be like a river.
Right, but if you remember, I also mentioned the fact that after you kasha something, put it underneath the water, you know, under
the
running water, right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that'll be it for tonight. Okay, tonight is the 20th of February. We're continuing in Avodah Zorah, Ayin Hey, Amud Aleph.
Here he is.
Ah,
but
yes.
I don't know where.
We're in the middle of the page. Right. Okay. We already went, that's the second line after. Well, actually, it's the end one. The last word on the line below Rabbi Yossi, okay?
Where it
says Vachaba, okay? You're right, there are two Rabbi Yossis. The second Rabbi Yossi I'm talking about. The one that says you put it underneath the pipe where the water runs, okay? We have flowing water. Right. The end of the line just below it. Where it says Kaba. Right. So it says Vakaba, oh no. All right. So, before they said, we have to go back again. One of the statements said that when you wash it, right, so you wash it, that is, you let it stay for an odor and then you wash it. So the question is, what does odor mean? Okay. Okay. Odor means a certain amount of time. But specifically, what time are we talking about? This is what the question is over here, okay? So, it says, "Kederach she'amru b'yayin nesach or b'yedesach, kach chomer b'taros." So, the statement says over here that just as whatever they said concerning Yayin Nesach, in other words, how to, let's say, cleanse it from Yayin Nesach. So, the same amount of time, the same processes, etc., would apply to taking something that had become Tomei and making it Tahor. All right? So the Gemara immediately objects and says, Klapi Laya, what do you, how can be a China, it says over there. It says, but Taharos Kaimanin. All these rules that we have learned, we are learning from Taros. So where does it say that Lavod is, you know, that the clean from Yayin Nesach is? So therefore, they correct the statement in order to say, all right, Betaros come in. So Elakader Shabu Betaros, but the way that the Mishnah has already described what you have to do with Taurus, because all these quotations that we had were from how do you make something Tahor out of Tomei, right? So they said likewise, this is what should also apply to Yayin Nesach. Okay, so again comes in the question, so Kama Ono, so how much, I mean, you tell me this, that, okay, and but please tell me, how much is it? No, no. As we said, you know, the period of time that you can't do it, and then you have to, you know, you have to wait that time before you can do it. So Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he said, O Yom, O Lailon, either it's a day or it's a night. Meaning what? If, let's say, it became Tomei during the day, then you have to wait the entire day, and then you do it at night, right? If, on the other hand, it became Tomei during the night, then what do you have to do? You have to wait the entire night, and then you can first do it, first make it Torah on the following day, right? So far, so good. So far, so good, I say. All right. So, Rab Chana Shina, this is a name. I have to read it right, okay? Rab Chana Shina, the Ami law, Rab Chana Bar Shina, in order to say that his name is really Chana, the son of Shina, right? Omar Rabbi Bar Chana, he said the name of Rabbi Bar Chana, and he said, Omar Rabbi Yom Chana, who in turn quotes it, in the name of let's see, my eye again skips by the looks of it. Rabbi Yochanan said it in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. It says Chatzi Yom v'Chatzi Laila, which means that if it started during the day, start counting from that moment, right? Let's say it happened at, let's say 12 o'clock, let's say 10 o'clock in the morning, right? So that's Chatzi Yom. So you have to go through the rest of the day until 10 o'clock at night. In other words, 12 hours, okay? And likewise, if it happened during the night, then it became Tomei, then you do likewise, it would be Laila Miyom, right? Chatzi Laila, Chatzi Yom. Why does it say Chatzi? It says Chatzi because it's not the full amount of time. It's not the first one which said Kamod, and he said Yom Valayla, right? Either it's Yom or it's Laila. So what would Yom imply? It would imply that actually it's the entire day. Laila would imply the entire night. Here, this correction is that you count 12 hours from the time that it happened, which is going to include part of the day and part of the night. Okay? So far it sounds good.
Chatzi normally means half.
Half. Right. Yeah. But this is the implication over here. This is what it means. Okay?
Take a piece of this and a piece of that.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't always translate exactly word for word. I mean, we've seen it time and again.
Yeah.
Okay? Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. Shmuel Bar Yitzchak says, "Lo plegei." He says, "In reality, it is not a difference of opinion, because where it said Yom or Laila, right? As explanation of what the word Ono means. So it says Chobit Kufas Nisan V'Tishrei. That would be fine. Either." Let's say in the spring season or in the fall season, when what do we find? That day and night are more or less even, right? More or less. Okay, we know that it doesn't work out 100% because the later in the season it is, there's more discrepancy. But at least there's a possibility for that, okay? Whereas, Abit Kuvas Talmud for Teves, however, in the summer season and in the winter season, right? So, what do we find? We find that there, day and night periods, you know, are not even at all. I mean, we know that in the summertime, the days are longer, the nights are shorter. In the wintertime, the nights are longer and the days are shorter. That's how you get it. So you can't do it exactly. So this is why it says part of the day and part of the night. Okay. All right. So now they continue. And they say, Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda said, Hana Rafki Darabai, the Mazio, Matichon, the Amram and Agvon, the Kitna Miyashna. Okay. Fine. Which means, these are sort of like nets. But the nets are made, you know, they belong to Goyim. Obviously, one of these nets was strainers. Let's say strainers. Strainers is a little more closer to it, okay? These strainers that they use for the wine. So, they've been used by a Goy. How can you... Or how long do you have to wait, in other words, before you can make them kosher, okay? Because this is what the whole talk over here is right now, you know, how to take something that has come in contact with your nesach and made it kosher. But, you know, they based it on the what they already taught in the Mishnah about Tahar and Tomei. How do you make Tomei Tahar again? Okay. So, he says, if it is made of Mazia, Mazia means hair, if it's made of hair, then what you have to do? Madichon. In other words, you rinse them with water. Okay? And you can use them. Okay. Because apparently what he wants to say is that if it's made of human hair, this is what I'm talking about, if it's made of human hair, it's not going to adhere the same, it's not going to absorb as much as, let's say, other materials will. Okay? So then he continues and he says, the Amra, if they're made of wool, then in that case, minagvan, which means that literally dry them, but we learned that drying is not drying, but it said it's what? It's scouring, remember? Scouring, you have to scour it. How do you scour it? Remember with what? Water, ashes, water, ashes, water. Right, the 3, 4, 5 pieces. Right. So that's what you have to do if it's if these strainers are made of wool. And the kitna, what if they're made of flax? You notice by the word that kitna is the word from which the word cotton comes. Yeah, right. Yeah. So if they're made of flax, then in that case, miyashton. What do we learn miyashton means? We learn that miyashton means you have to let them stay for a year before you can, okay? Literally, you have to let them get old. How do you get old? A year, okay. Every year, you get a little older, okay? So, okay, the E, Ika Katare, and if there are knots in it, what do you have to do? Shorinavu. You have to have to loosen them all. You have to undo them, right? Remember the old joke about the Jew who gave the talus to the cleaner, Jewish cleaner? You don't know that one? The Jew wanted to have his talus cleaned, so he gave it to a Goyish cleaner to clean for him. So he gets it back, since it's all unraveled and everything else, and the guy charges him a lot of money. He says, how come you dare charge me all this amount? He says, think of all the time it took me in order to
unravel
to listen to all the knots that you had in there.
P.S. don't give your talent to clean to enjoy.
Or you give the warning.
Tell him,
yeah, when I bring him mine in Tala, so I tell them, don't dare on
me. Don't touch.
Right.
Behold then.
Yeah, second line from the bottom right now.
Second line from the bottom.
Right.
Oh, wow. Second line.
Yeah.
It really is 75.
Yeah.
Right. I and A.
Right.
Okay, we're almost done, huh?
Yep.
Go home then.
Okay. All right, we continue. Hane dekule v'chaloso darbaya. Here we're talking about some kinds of baskets that they use. Okay. But again, the word Aramean over here, just as it had a few lines above, doesn't really mean Aramean, but you know, it's. They wanted to pass the censor, so they didn't say, yeah.
This was straining the
wine. Right, for straining wine, exactly, right.
So what do they mean by that,
Armin? What they mean is a goy, right. And, of course, they asked me what kind of a goy. Naturally, in those days, they were talking about goyim who were of the Avodah Zarah, right? I mean, they were idolaters, okay. So, Dechite bechavle, the tsure madichon. Okay, so it says if it is dechite. Dechite means if it's for the purpose of wheat, then. And if they're made of literally like ropes.
Ropes of palm tree.
From the palm tree, okay, then in that case you have to
Princeton.
Well, what if you use it with the kosher wine?
Yeah, well, the question is, does it absorb or anything? The question is also, I mean, how long, you know, you have to keep it, so it's only before you can do anything.
Really, it's only, another problem. Only fibers anyway, you know.
Yeah, right. But we had just before you came in, I mean, that if it's made of human hair, it doesn't absorb as well.
Yeah.
But if it's made of wool or flesh, it retains it longer. So in each case, there's a different method in order to make it taller.
Probably. Probably.
Right. Okay.
What do you want?
All right. We are now on Ayin Hay on the base. All right. If it's the tzavta, which is a kind of a rush, reed, whatever you want to call them, right? The nagva, in that case, you have to scour them, as we said. The kitna, scour. Remember
scour.
We said
the
whole business, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was
water, ashes,
water,
etc., etc. Right,
ashes.
That's why the translation to dry them is not really correct, I mean, because that's not the process that they tell you.
What is the correct one?
Well, I said, but you have to scour it with ashes of water, and ashes, and so on. I'm the earth originally
earthy man.
The people of the land, literally.
Earth.
But I have to tell you, in the Bible itself, the expression usually refers to, let's say, the aristocracy or something like that. The important people, cabinet people and stuff like that. So they would be the Amorites, okay?
They're not the Amorites.
That's in the Bible. However, in the time of our sages, the time of the Talmud, Amorites took on a very pejorative meaning.
Right.
It meant people who did not have a sufficient Jewish education.
Ignorant.
And right, they were ignorant, and therefore they were lax in certain things. Okay? Now,
what if he was a university graduate but didn't have any great Jewish background? You still call him an Amoritz? He got an PhD?
An Amoritz Jewishly.
A PhD is an Amoritz?
He's an Amoritz as far as Judaism is concerned. Right, yeah. You have loads of them. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah, of course. That's why I bring up the subject.
Our universities, colleges are full of Jewish faculty members, for example.
Amoritz,
they know nothing. They don't know
anything.
They
don't know
something
about
like
Judaism.
That. Right. Exactly.
In Yiddish, it was a pejorative term.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
because let's say the attitude, right?
Not a very good person.
Correct.
Okay, really,
like, if you ask a stupid question of a rabbi, he says, "No, I'm Oritz," you know. you got to be stupid to ask a question like that, you know.
Yeah, needless to say, I mean, it's ever since the meaning, the idea, you know, that changed, became pejorative in meaning, then. That's the way we always think in terms of that. Okay. All right.
What does Sirit mean?
Right.
As a man who's not learning the Torah, right?
Right, right. As I say, because they were suspected of laxity in reference to mitzvahs, and particularly in the time of the Chazal, I mean, the time that we're talking about over here, the time of the Talmud.
Oh, yeah.
Where you had people who were very, very careful about Tara v'Tuma. They wanted to make sure that whatever they ate was always in the state of Tara, even though it did not have to be. But they took it upon themselves that they wanted to be more strict to make sure. And in that particular case, what would be their fear? That an Amoritz might come along and, by his touch or whatever it may be, make it tummy. Exactly.
So it wasn't just
the
Avodah Zarah.
No, that's correct.
But he didn't
know
the rules.
Here it's exactly.
they're afraid of Jews who are ignorant of or who don't practice these regulations to make sure that.
And Judaism, the Jews, who didn't respect the law even. The Jew who didn't even respect the law. It was a sort of a lack of
there were people like that, definitely, right. A long, long time ago, we also had the business of a mumor. A mumor of the Hachis and a mumor of the Tayovod. I don't know if you remember.
What is that?
Okay. A mumor the Tayovon means a guy at the Shmecht Ashtikel the Chazer, okay?
Chazer.
Doesn't have kosher food around.
So he
decides that I have to eat, right?
He has an
appetite, so he eats treifas.
Yeah.
Okay. He is a mumor l'teyavon, because he has, teyavon in Hebrew means an appetite. He has an appetite, okay, for it. But the mumor l'hachis is one who writes
Absalachis,
I mean, right.
Absalachis.
Exactly. It's exactly the deal.
Lahachis,
literally to anger somebody, like spitting in the eyes of the people. Right. Lahachis, from the word kaas, kaas. Right, right. Yeah, literally to make angry. Right. To provoke someone, right. They're doing this purposely in order to show you how they contempt, they have contempt for you and so on, right? Yeah.
What is the year? We're talking about the Chazal. What era are we?
The time of the Talmud would be roughly about anywhere from the beginning or even before the beginning of the Christian century, right? Before the Common Era. And extending in the days of the Mishnah till about the year 200, but after the days of the Mishnah, going to the time of the Talmud, extending to about the year 500 of the Common Era. So you have, quite an expanse of, right, several centuries, right, yeah. Okay, so now to get back to this Am Haaretz. Okay, line 2. Yeah. Says Am Haaretz Hoshit Yodo Legatz. Okay, the Gatz, if you remember, this is where they pressed wine, right? Okay, so there are grapes right in the wine press, right? And along came an Am Haaretz, and he stuck his hand into it. Okay, so. V'nagav eshkolos. As a result, he touched the clusters of grapes. Okay? So Rabbi Chia, there was a difference of opinion between Rabbi and Rabbi Chia. Chad Omar, one of them said, Eshkol v'chotz v'vesov t'beyin v'chol agas kula tohora. It says, the cluster and those clusters that are close to it, literally that surround it, in other words, that have had some contact with it, so they have become tomei as a result of the touch of the Am Haaretz. But anything else in the wine press still remains tohor. Okay? The Chad Omar, and the other one said, Kol Agas Kula Nami Tameya, that everything now in the wine press is automatically Tomei. Okay? Difference of opinion between Rabbi and Rabbi Chia, doesn't say who, but usually the first one is the one that we presume is, the first opinion mentioned, and then the second one is the author of the second opinion. Okay, say that's an assumption, but it's not always so. Okay, so they now ask the question: Mishno mehodet none. How is this case different from a different case that we learned in the Mishnah. A Mishnah that says, Sheretz shenimtzo borei chayim, eino mitame ela makom magovo. A sheretz is a reptile-like creature or a creature that's on the creeps on the earth or something like that, you know, something like that. Okay, so let's say that there it is in the Rechayim. Rechayim are the, you know, the stones that they use in order to grind, the grindstones. Okay, in this case, however, what is the substance that being ground? The answer is, it's the wine. Okay? In other words, they're pressing grapes into wine. Okay? So, as Rashi says, he says, Shatochanin bohen zesev, they crush it, olives, right? They crush these olives before they put them into the, where you press out the olive. And then after that, you know, you just put a board on top of it and so forward. All right, so here you have then millstones that they use in order to grind out the olives, okay? And and here a sheretz, you know, happened to be over there. So the question is, what is the result? So it says, what becomes tamei is only the place where the sheretz touched. So far, so good, right? In other words, remove the sheretz and what? And the rest is okay, right? Only that spot would be tamei. The imhoya mashkin, the halich, however, if already there was, liquid olives, you know, that was already beginning to flow over there, and obviously it means that it touched, you know, the millstone and everything else, and in that case, hakol tamei, right? Then everything, it becomes tamei. So they want to know, what is the difference between the case of, the wine that was touched, I mean the grapes, the clusters of grapes that were touched by the Am Haaretz, as compared to the place that was touched by the reptile, right? In the case of the reptile, what did it say? Only that spot is tamei, yeah. Unless there's liquid, right? And in the case of the where the Amorites touched clusters of grapes, then in that particular case, one opinion said just the grapes, that and its immediate neighbors, so to speak, right? Those, because obviously they're going to be intertwined, right? So that is tamei, but the rest is tahor. But the other guy says, what? It's all tamei. So why did you guess? Yeah.
The hand goes in.
Right.
How could you know exactly which ones would touch?
Yeah, that's true. But somebody sees him with something like that.
Why do you assume that the Am Haaretz, if he touches the grape, that he's already done an avla? Why do you
assume
that?
It's not an avla. But the point is that if you are so careful that you've taken an oath before a group of chachomim that you're going to eat only things in taro, you understand? This is what the chaver did.
Yeah.
Well, we had that. I mean, what is chaver and so on. So in that particular case, you want to make sure that people who are not observant of the strictness, right? Okay.
Let them do it themselves. let the people
granted,
touch their own grapes.
Granted. Fine.
But what happens if somebody who is on that board
so
did it?
You throw it out, that's all.
You throw it out. Okay.
Well,
so what's the big deal?
Okay. So that's what the question is. Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The reptile, lizard.
Right.
He's scampered. How can you say he's just the spot that
he's right. He's right. That's right.
He's what?
Scampers. Scampers.
He scampers. But we're talking about one that's a dead one.
You want to be safe? Throw the whole thing out. Never mind.
It's there.
It's there.
Oh,
all right.
Very good. Very good.
When did it die?
Who knows?
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, you find a reptile over there.
When did it die?
Obviously, sure. If he went away and you didn't see him, you wouldn't know, would you?
You put a note on, I was here.
If he was alive, he'd be running around inside. So there's no question.
Right, right.
Yeah. Or maybe he drowns in it.
Okay. Drink a lot of wine, you could probably
be worrying about cash.
Oh, yeah, he got drunk.
We'd be worrying about
okay.
No. All right.
All right. So they want to make a difference. So they say,
you can't
awesome. Okay. In the case of the reptile, it says, "No popsicle, no mini." He didn't. There's nothing. I mean, he was just there in that particular spot, and that's it. Okay, but he didn't go to all over the spot, except if it was wet. Where we said in that case that it would carry right. But haha, in the case of the clusters of grapes, he says, "Mopsicle, no." Mopsica Eshkolos. I skipped the line. That's what's happened over there. Mopsica Eshkolos. There, in the case of the clusters of grapes, they're all intertwined, and that's the reason why that, you know, that they have to be much more careful about that. Okay. So, Orle Rabbanon Rabbi Yumir. So, the rabbis, the sages, they had a meeting, and they said, Rabbi Yumir, this is what we pasket, okay? The Yabrale, the Vray, the Rabbi Yirmiyah. Others say it wasn't that they gave this psak to Rabbi Yirmiyah, but to Rabbi Yirmiyah's son. Okay. Namely, Kedivrei Ho'imir Ishko V'chot Svivot Bayin. Okay. The Chol Hagas Kulo Tahira. He said, you know, what we pasket, we pasket. That cluster and its neighboring clusters, right, they are tame, but the rest of the wine press, whatever it may be there and so on, is it's all tahor.
Okay. Is what?
Tahor.
Okay.
Sure. It's okay. The rest is okay.
You wouldn't drink any. It's all tame. Get it.
Okay. All right, what do you do if you find a fly in your wine cup?
What do I do? I just rescue it and put it outside.
So do you drink the wine after you got the fly out?
No, I throw it out.
Oh, you throw it out. Okay.
If you have
Sure.
Romaine, you have to wash.
Particularly
in case
a fly.
God forbid, a mite of a thing should be left. even the slightest little... You're supposed to wash it. Romaine less than 3 times, at least.
Yes,
so
yes.
No, isn't that what they're looking for? The
romaine is a tremendous problem because of the mites, that's true.
Yeah.
But the same story is, how about strawberries? There are those who won't touch strawberries because they say little tiny creatures are hidden inside of them and so on and so forth. And if you want, you can say the same thing for broccoli and asparagus.
You could say that for everything.
Right. So what am I going to tell you?
Yeah.
At times it becomes a little difficult to live in accordance with that. I mean, you wash it to the best of your ability.
Right.
And, you know, that's it, you know. Right.
You sleep with your mouth open, have a fly for a penny and swallow it. You gotta say.
In New York City, there was a whole tararab
right?
Well, there was a whole Tara Rob in New York City about the water. They said that there were little creatures running around in the water over there.
Oh, sure.
So people installed filters in order to make sure that it would prevent any little microscopic things, you know, from running around over there.
We wouldn't want to take a really scientific microscope
right.
to check our water either.
Yeah, I'm right. I'm sure that you're right, yes. Beverly, I'm sure, has that experience.
You know, I saw a report you put out.
You don't see it, you don't know it.
Okay.
They published this, pamphlet about what's in your water. I don't read it.
Why not?
Well, I want to be able, I want to drink the water.
Doctor, I just have a question about what we just studied.
Right.
Because I want to make sure I understand this. The last on the facade that what is touched is tummy and everything else.
Right, what he touched. Right.
Does that refer to the Alpha Auras reaching in and touching?
Yes.
It doesn't refer to the reptile. It refers to the Alpha Auras.
No, right. It refers to the Alpha Auras. Right, right, exactly.
I have to, another silly question.
Sure.
Huh? How come the rabbis issued a ruling to Rabbi Yirmiyahu? Who did they give the answer to the son? Why? Were they afraid of approaching
the rabbi? Either him or his son, whatever. Okay. It's just a question, who got the news? So, they want to be accurate, I mean, when it comes to quotations, you know, because they want to make sure that they cite the right person.
I'm sure the Muslims threw the wine away, that's all they get about it.
Okay. All right, we have a new Mishnah over here, I think that we shall save it for next week, okay?
Oh, you're going to save
because
it next week?
I think so, I'll tell you why. Some people want to see an eclipse tonight.
No, what kind of eclipse? You're not going to see any eclipse tonight.
I don't know.
Yeah.
10 o'clock.
It's a 10 o'clock.
Is the moon out?
All right. So I would say so. Yeah. Let's start the new Mishnah and go a little bit further on the page.
You have to make a broken when you say that, right? When you see the yellow eclipse, right?
No. There are brokers that they make for comets, for earthquakes.
Is there a
No, because it's something bad. It's something bad. I have to tell you.
It's bad.
It's a bad simon, according to the Gemara.
Why is it a bad simon?
Because the Jews are compared to the
Simon
moon.
Ra.
To the moon. They're compared to the moon. Okay?
Yeah.
And compared to the moon because first of all, our whole monthly system is based upon the moon. Okay, that's number one. But secondly, because just as the moon waxes, wanes, and then waxes again, right? So likewise, the people of Israel, we have our Tzoras, we wane, but then
we
gain new strength and we wax again.
Right.
Okay. Wax, by the way, is like the German word or the Yiddish word, waxen. You know? Right, right. Yeah, it has nothing to do with wax, that is spirit.
What's that got to do with the eclipse?
The answer is that if we are compared to the moon, then an eclipse is considered a bad sign
because the moon
disappears. Right, that's why.
But it comes
this
out.
It's not a solar eclipse,
but
it's a lunar eclipse. Right. Right. Well, I'm telling you, how the Gemara looks about it.
Okay.
Does that mean you shouldn't look at it, or
No, you can look at it. Just a comparison that they make, that's all. Okay. All right, so we'll learn a little bit more over here, and I have to tell you, here we're going into big problem of kashrus.
Big.
Big problem. Before?
We have all kinds of problems.
This is the introduction
right.
laws of purging.
All right.
Utensils.
So the Mishnah begins by saying Halokeach kli tashmish b'noevde kechovim. Okay, if you acquire vessels that can be used, that's a literal translation. Now, in this particular case, by kli tashmish they mean actually, of course, cooking. Anything that has to do with cooking vessels, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. From an idolater. Okay? So, if the normal process of this particular pot or whatever it may be, you know, is used, you know, just for, let's say, to dip water or something like that, okay, to hold water in.
I mean, if but the idol worker should use it.
Yeah. And of course, what we have in mind is it's used for cold. It's really what
cold?
They're trying to say. Cold.
Oh, cold things.
Things.
Cold
right.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, yatpil, in that particular case, you can make it kosher for, you know, Jewish use by tefling it. In other words, by dipping it. Now, how do you dip it? Of course, the answer is we'll discover is that they mean that you have to put it into the mikveh. Okay?
Mikveh.
Into a mikveh. Okay. Lahagil, if it is the kind of a pot that, for example, is used in order to boil water, okay, then in that particular case, what do you have to do? Yagil. You have to boil it out, right?
What do they mean by that?
You have to boil it. Put in water, boil it, let it run over. Usually you throw in a stone or something like that, or a piece of metal or something. Right, so there's a kashrin, this is what we're talking about. Okay. But if it's from a goy, then technically it should also be then brought to a mikveh and tefilled. Technically. Okay?
What does the tefilling do for it?
I'll explain in a second.
Okay.
The lave, if it's used directly on fire, the lave ba'or, okay, it's really really ur, but of course it means fire in this particular case. So, in that particular case, you know, like for example, a frying pan or a grill or something like that, and then, in that case, what do you have to do?
Like a barbecue.
Right. So, in that case, then you're lobbing. You're lobbing means that you have to heat it up to a point where, for example, straw will immediately catch fire over there or something like that. You know, real hot, very hot, very hot. That's the point. Right. Like kashering a stove, exactly what it is. Right. So, from this we learn, all right, first of all, about a mitzvah to do what? To tefill kelim, right? And we also learned that how kelim, you know, how any vessel, whatever you want to call it, is used, in order to kosher it, you have to do it in accordance with what is its use normally, okay? And of course, we know that, for example, drinking glasses or something like that. Okay. It's enough, I mean, you know, to soak them or something like that. And what we do is, like, well, you want to use glassware for Pesach, so you soak it for 3 days, changing the water once every 24 hours or something like that, and automatically that's it. But those things that are used in order, you know, pots that are used for cooking, and in that case you have to burn it out. I don't mean burn it out, you have to boil it out, right. And if it's something that's used directly on fire, then in that particular case, then you have to, you know, to bring it to very high heat. So these are the three different methods that they discuss over here. All right. Hashfud the Haskola. And they give an example, huh?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to stop you. Are you saying that after these methods, that in each and every event it still has to be tefillah?
If it's acquired from a goy, we're talking about.
Right. Yes. I mean, in this.
But if it happens in your own home, you're not a goy. So in that particular case, if something becomes treif, you try to make it kosher if you possibly can, right?
So,
but you don't have the inyan, you know, that you have to run to the mikveh in order to do it.
That's also assuming that originally,
right,
it was, if it's a Jew, that it was originally tabled.
That's correct. Right.
it's assuming that it's correct. We'll discuss that at greater length too, as you know, we study this page.
That's
okay.
That's
an answer, right. So the Mishnah now gives another example. Ha scholar belabdan. Shvud is a spit. You know, you stick it through something for a barbecue.
It's a barbecue.
Right, okay. So that's it's always on the fire and so on. So that's an example, for example, that you have to heat up. The same thing with our scholar. Our scholar is sort of like a frying pan or something like that.
Right.
That you have to heat up, because it's directly on the fire. Hasakin shofa. When it comes to a knife, so the first thing that you have to do literally is to polish it. How do you polish it? Well, different ways to do it, but you know, scouring it or something like that, it has to be cleaned. The heat to horror, then it's clean. Well, with knives, I have to tell you, there are different ideas as to what to do. Right. Right, stick it 10 times to the ground, something like that, you know. I'm sure you've heard of that. Right.
It seems to
right.
me, though, that the part where cutting element
needs
the handle,
yeah.
that could be a problem area.
Definitely, it could be a problem. If you put it into a, you know, if you know that the handle's, some say that the handle has to be removed. I don't see how you can do it because it's...
I thought you couldn't crush a knife that has a wooden handle or a paper knife.
Well, that's a big problem. How do you do it, you see?
Right.
So
my understanding was that you could not do it.
So that's why we have this business, you know, sticking it 10 times on the ground or something like
ground.
That. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What does that do for it?
That, again, it gets rid of whatever might possibly have been absorbed that was trafe. That's the answer. I mean, what are we trying to do? We're trying to get rid of whatever might have been absorbed that made a trafe.
Right.
I mean, this is what it is. Right. Pardon me?
I'm just trying to make sure. I say you just have to hope this. You're poking the knife in the ground. You're not getting insurance.
Oh, yeah, right, okay. Sheretz, it shouldn't shech the Sheretz.
Yeah.
Poor Sheretz.
Oh,
okay.
The worms I use for fishing. You have to be circumcised before I put them on a hook.
Okay. It will do a couple of more lines and call it a night. Because here's the answer to the question. It says, "Hulon tzrich in the Gemara, Tana." We learned the Baraisa, which says, "Hulon tzrich in the Vila, the Arboim Soda." They all have to be tevilled in 40 Sa'ah. In other words, in a mikveh, which has, you know, the minimum amount of water in it of 40 Sa'ah.
No matter where they come from.
Yeah. Minoah Hanimili, and how do we know that? Says Amar Rava. So Rava said, the Omar Kroh, well, we have a Pasuk, it says.
Okay.
And what is the Pasuk?
Pasuk
is, and I don't know if you remember, when the Jews made war against the Midianites. So then, you know, they took the spoils, right?
Right.
And it says over there, called Dovar Asher Yovei Ba'esh Ta'aviru Ba'esh V'Taher. Anything which is used in fire, then you have to let it go through fire, right? And then it becomes tahar, right? Hosif l'chohakosif tahara acheres. Now, why does it say v'tahir? We would imagine it's not necessary. So, therefore, the fact that it's there in the pasuk means that there is another stage that it has to go through. And of course, what is that other stage? That other stage is to put it into the mikveh. So,
but it doesn't say that's derived. That idea is derived, not.
Yeah, correct, correct.
It's not,
of course.
It's not stated in the
right. Right. This is Rava's interpretation.
Yeah, Rava. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Tani bar kapora. Kapora brings a different verse. He says, "Betok shene'emar b'nei nido." Inasmuch as the pasuk continues in the same chapter and says that it has to be dipped in the water of a nida, in other words, the water that a woman who is amendment, then she becomes, you know, Torah again, right? So how much does it require? It requires the 40 sar, right? So Shemei Ani, from this I understand, Shetzorech Hazor Shlishis, this is already a question, B'mei Nida. He derives it from the words B'mei Nida, okay? But now, they ask the following question. Shemei Ani, Shetzorech Hazor Shlishis, in the case of the Midianites that we were talking about, said that if people had become unclean, right, and they have to go into the mikveh, they have to be clean, but also they have to be sprinkled with what?
With what?
With the Por Aduma Efer, right? The ashes of the Por Aduma, the water ash mixture of the Por Aduma on the third day. After they had, become Tomei, and also on the seventh day, right? Yeah. Okay.
You're talking about the red heifer?
Not the red heifer. The red heifer.
Por
Aduma, right. 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 Yeah.
We're getting involved here.
Of course we're getting involved. Okay. So, does this have to take place also, in other words, with an object that you're cooking, that you use for cooking, that you have to sprinkle the ashes upon it on the third day and on the seventh day before it can become clean, right? So therefore, Talmud Loima, this is why then the Torah tells us, but chalak. And when you have the word ach, it means that, wait a minute, but that general rule has an exception. What is the general rule? Lastly, the general rule would be that you have to have you have to sprinkle on the third day and the seventh day, right? It ought to become clean, but not so in the case of what? Not so in the case of Caleb, only in the case of human beings. Okay.
Human beings,
right, okay. That's the answer. Uh-huh. Okay. so he says, Imkain, this is the interpretation of Bar Kappar.
I see.
So Imkain, Ma Talmud Levin Bein Nidor, so that's the case, that why does it have to say Bein Nidor, which would make us think that whatever, it should apply. So he says, Mayim Shanido develops my head. In other words, the water in which a Nida immerses herself. And Yomer, in other words, what? Arboyim Soda.
You're talking about a
40 of water. Right.
Well, you're talking about a Nida who is finished menstruating, right?
Correct.
Okay, I would hope so.
Correct. Of course.
Okay.
She has to count days and everything
count days,
else.
Yeah,
but
sure.
The point that I'm making is that just as one of the main nidor is the amount of water that a nidor has to travel when she, goes from the state
of
Tumah to Tahara, you understand?
Yeah.
So likewise, these kalim, have to be immersed in a mikveh of 40 sar, in order to go from tumah to tahara. That's the idea. Now, what is the tumah? It means the tumah of having been used by a goy. Okay.
All right.
So let's see. Today is the 27th of February, and we continue right now with Avodah Zarah. Ayin Hey, Ovid Beis, 75B, from where we left off last week. Okay.
Give us the first word on the line.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. It's going to begin again, sort of like what we had before. Okay. Alright, so Itzirich Mabichtev V'Tahir V'Itzirich Mabichtev V'Meidin. You see the word Itzirich over there, right in the middle? The middle line.
What line?
The middle line, Itzirich. You see that? See, Itzirich Olive Yud Tzadi?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, I got it.
Got it. Good.
Yes.
Okay. Yitzrich, you know,
yeah,
means it's necessary.
Yeah.
All right. Yitzrich lebichtav toher, v'yitzrich lebichtav b'beinita. I need both of those expressions that the Torah mentions. The one that says b'toher, in other words, become clean, right? And the other one which says it may need to. Because ikosav, if the Torah had written v'toher and not the other one, then have a yamino v'toher koldahu. I would have said that it becomes clean, becomes tohor, in just the slightest amount of water. Okay? So, because of Rachmona b'mei nida, that's the reason why the Torah wrote b'mei nida, to tell you, no. A little water doesn't do the job, but instead you have to do it, you know, in a mikveh. Okay? Because of Rachmona b'mei nida, and if the Torah had written only b'mei nida, then hava amina harif shemesh kinida. Then I might have said that you might dip it, but you can't use it until the evening. Because we have such a thing, first of all, a nida herself cannot really go into the mikveh until at night. Okay? If a nida goes in, you know, during the day, it's not good enough. She should go at night. Okay? Only in emergency they would permit, you know, to go the following day, because it's already after the time when she should have gone in, but that would only be an emergency situation. Under normal circumstances, the woman goes in at night. Okay. Or there are other cases where you have immersion, as for example what we call a tevul yom, an expression that once in a while I've come across before. Tevul yom means that, for example, a kohen became unclean. Okay. He's not allowed to eat truma in the state of tuma. Okay? Kohen can only eat truma when he's in the state of tara. That's what we learned. So what happens if he becomes unclean? So he has to go into the mikveh. He doesn't have to wait till the night time in order to go into the mikveh. He can go into the mikveh during the day, but he's not allowed to eat the truma until nighttime, until the sun has set. Okay, that's what they mean by Harav Shemesh. So, the point that they're making over here is that you might think then that if you toiveled a kelim during the day, that you would have to wait until the nighttime before it becomes clean for use. So, there's the reason why it says Betoher, okay? Which means La'altar. La'alta means immediately. Okay? In other words, as soon as this was titled, then immediately it becomes Tor. Okay? Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Rav Barabuha. So Rav Nachman said in the name of Rav Barabuha, he said, Afilu Kelim Chadoshim B'mashma. He says, this applies even to new vessels. In other words, in Midian, what were they talking about? Remember, we were talking about the spoils of war, right? Which Midianites had presumably used beforehand, right? So, okay, so a goy had used it, and we want to make it kosher, and so we have to clean it, etc., according to the methods that they prescribed, you know, whether it was used with cold water, whether it was used with fire, was it used for boiling, and so on and so forth. But the point is that these were all used objects. Okay, so we can understand that why they wanted to put it into the mikveh. You understand? To travel it. But what is happening over here is that they're extending it from used things to brand new things. And this is the problem that we face, because today, I mean, for the most part, we're buying new utensils. But still, according to the law, they should be titled. Unless you buy something made by a Jew, handled only by Jews, and sold only by Jews. In Eretz Yisrael, that's a possibility.
We don't really know.
As long as it doesn't say...
As long as it doesn't say made in China.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, if you take a look at a lot of kosher items, it's made in China.
all the Holy Land souvenirs.
Yeah.
They used to be made in Japan. Now that they made.
That was a good law when the time when you knew where stuff was coming from. You who made it.
Yes. I agree. This is a very, very difficult situation right now that we face. Yes.
That is. Sometimes to touch something, you have to put it in boiling water.
Yeah. All right. Ruth, we had in the Mishnah they described that. Things that, for example, are used with cold water, so you have to title it. This is what the Mishnah said. You title it. But again, we were really talking about something that had already been used beforehand, okay? Because this is what the Mishnah was originally talking about, okay? Things that have been used, let's say, for boiling, so in that particular case, it has to be boiled, okay? Things that are used on the fire itself, like, for example, a spit, a grill, or something like that, and then in that particular case, then that has to be kashered, you know. Through that. So these principles apply to kashering of something that goes wrong that we already possess, but also would apply to anything, you know, that... If you knew it had already been used by a guy, so it would have to go through the same process, okay, and titled, okay. But what I'm saying is that now this extends the principle that they have to title even new things. So that already is a much more complicated area because, you know, we, for the most part, we buy new dishes, new pots, new pans, new appliances, and so on and so forth. What do you do with them, you see? This is a big problem.
People buy antiques.
And antique is another problem. Right. That's a different problem. Yeah.
Well, I've always thought that the glassware that you can soak and use...
Well, it depends. Strictly speaking, glass, if it's used only for drinking purposes or something like that, then in that particular case...
I don't mean...
Right.